The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL. Hey guys, obviously you love the NFL and NFL podcasts, so you need to check out the one other podcast that can get you everything you need to know about the biggest NFL games and analysis on the postseason. I'm talking about our friend Ross Tucker and the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. Ross played 7 years in the NFL before retiring, so you know he's got the insider knowledge you crave. Be sure to check out the Ross Tucker Football Podcast every week on Podcast One, Apple Podcasts, and many of your favorite podcast listening apps. Welcome into the PFF NFL Podcast. Steve Palazzolo here with Sam Monson. We're previewing week 16 in the NFL.
Almost finished.
Almost finished.
Regular season.
Almost to the playoffs.
Draft, free agency.
Never ends.
No, never.
No, because you guys are going to stick with us forever here on the PFF NFL Podcast. But for now, regular season stuff. Mm-hmm. And we're back to the desk.
Yeah.
We're evolving.
We revolted.
Yeah, Nobody wanted to see me sitting in a chair.
What did your wife tell you you look like in that chair?
Pretty much an idiot.
There was a specific thing she told you you look like.
Let's see. I can pull up the text messages here.
Okay. It's topical as well.
She started with, no new set, not a good look for you.
Uh-huh.
I could see your stomach.
Yeah, sure.
Uh-huh. Your shirt pulled weird. You know, we're over here in these beautiful, nice, proper cloth shirts, yeah. And they were just...
Didn't help, yeah.
It was not helping.
Didn't flatter them.
Makes your nice shirts look like poop.
Okay.
And you can't even see... Well, forget that. Your legs go out too far.
They do.
Like, it looks like you were Buddy the Elf.
There you go. Buddy the Elf. You did look like Buddy the Elf in that set.
Like you're about to tell me the mystery story hour.
So we've gone back to the desk for the moment.
That's feedback from beautiful Kelly Palazzolo.
From the woman that told you were no longer slim fit when you were ordering your proper cloth shirts.
Good thing, because it would have bunched up even more.
So we've gone back to the desk. We're going to play around with a couple of other options.
Yeah, we need more of like a let's face each other.
Right. This is our like standard studio setup, right?
And right.
When we do that, we're talking to people on camera.
Right, but
most people do podcasts. They face and talk to each other.
We got
to
look at each other.
You just have to be listening to it.
You don't want to look at me for 2 hours.
I mean, but maybe more of an angle towards you than the camera.
I think we need
somewhere
a 45 degree angle.
Right. We need a halfway house.
Or maybe more of an acute angle than 45.
Where I can look a little bit in your direction, but not have to face you the whole time.
So that's what we're working on.
Yeah.
So bear with us, YouTubers.
But we have added a shiny football that the NFL sent us.
It is, I don't know if you've heard, 100th anniversary of the NFL right now.
Yeah.
So.
This is an extremely slippery football. You could not use that.
It's very gold.
Yeah.
Is that real gold?
No. You definitely couldn't use that in the wet.
No.
But in the dry, can you imagine how much that thing would stick to those like receiver gloves?
Yeah, it looks nice. Looks pretty. Appreciate that, NFL.
Yeah.
That was nice of them.
Arrived in the mail.
Little podcast prop. It's kind of being blocked a little bit by the ticker.
It's fine.
You can see it a little bit.
Get it.
All right, so we're previewing week 16. Good banter again. We're back at the desk. Mm. Can't see my knees up at my face again. It's fine. We're good.
Yeah.
Do we have any reads today? Where are my reads?
I'm sure we got some.
Now, we're just trying to do anything to get Ken back on camera. He was a big hit.
Yeah?
He
he showed up into, you know, the shot the other day to help fix some stuff.
Yeah.
So now we have to try to find ways to get.
Oh, here he is. Oh, it's Tyler.
No, we want Ken in here. We want Ken. Look at this. We have all sorts of stuff to read. Get ready for it.
Like, very good at keeping completely out of the shot.
Who isn't?
They both are. Like, if that was me, I would just wander in and hand it to you.
Remember that time
we had
Austin give us coffee?
Yeah. See, Austin wandered in here. He didn't have a care in the world.
Yeah,
those guys are like, you know.
I mean, if Austin brought me a coffee again, I wouldn't be mad.
He's
if
moved,
anybody brought
he's
me
moved
a coffee.
Up in the world now. He's like,
he has.
He's basically your boss at this stage.
No. I mean,
if he tells you to do an article, you got to jump.
Pretty much. Anyway, let's get to the Week 16 action. No Thursday night game this week. We got a triple header on Saturday. We'll go through the Saturday slate, and then we'll get through the Sunday slate. Sound good?
Yeah.
Here we go. Houston Texans at the Tampa Bay Bucks. They're kicking it off on Saturday. Is that right?
I mean, yeah.
Is that the order that you went in here?
I think so.
Yeah.
I assume this is the right order, but...
I think it is. Texans at the Bucks. A lot to look at here. I did the full, we talked about Jameis quite a bit on the Monday podcast. I did the full breakdown on Jameis.
It is 1 p.m.
Yes, Eastern. That's kicking it off. I did the full breakdown on Jameis. It was like, I felt like I just came out of a game playing like Jameis. I mean, my brain went in a million different directions. It was just like a roller coaster ride of emotions. And then I landed at, yeah, maybe give him one more year, see what happens. It was like a Jameis game.
Right. Except this is so. Firstly, you timed this perfectly. By the way, you got rid of the family in time to have a full Saturday taken over by football.
Oh, it's going
to
be great.
Yeah. I have yet to inform my wife that Saturday will be
Saturday's a work day this week. Yeah.
So you
better
do
something
out
between.
Well,
yeah. So, like a day and a half to maybe grab some flowers or something.
Right.
I don't know, whatever.
That's true.
Something she likes.
The Jameis thing. It's just every way you look at him, it's the same story, right? It's like there's a ton of things that make you go, oh, okay, maybe next year. You know, if we could just eliminate this stuff, like every year it's the same thing.
So here's essentially what the conclusion was. He hasn't changed who he's been,
mm-hmm.
right? He has been in the top four in positively graded throws every single year. Negative, I posted the ridiculous stat on Twitter. We've had 9 instances since 2010 where a quarterback's been in the top 20% of positives and top 20% of negatives. 9 instances where that's happened, 1 per season. In the NFL since 2010, Jameis has done it 4 out of those 9 times.
Yeah.
That is the most consistently inconsistent quarterback that we've ever seen.
Yes.
It's amazing.
So I started working on this morning and clued you in a little bit on it. It was actually an idea from one of our podcast listeners to an extent.
I thought you were the mastermind behind this.
Well, look, who gets the credit is not important, Steve.
Yeah.
What comes out of the end of it is.
Let me just finish my thought on this real quick.
Okay.
So the positives are usually what coincides with the Carson Palmer season, the 2015 Palmer mm-hmm. and the 2015 Cam and all the outlier seasons that we've looked at. It's the positives that spike. Jameis has no room to spike the positively graded throws. So what he is, though, is with the way he plays football, even if he stays consistent, the range of outcomes as far as statistical output goes is still wide. So if Jameis stays the exact same guy for the next 5 years, he could have a season that is like Cam Newton 2015 or a season that's like, say, Eli Manning 2013, where he had 18 touchdowns, 27 picks and all that stuff. So Jameis could never change, but the outcomes could change wildly based off a little bit of luck, his playmakers and all that stuff. So he's still extremely volatile, even though his PFF grade always ends up in the same range. It's like it truly is this massive roller coaster ride that ends up in the same area every single time. Sorry. Now, go ahead with your...
So, we keep diving into all these various different ways of essentially...
Well done. Look at you.
Quantifying this insane volatility that Jameis has, right? And one of the ways somebody thought of to come up with was, what if we tried to kind of combine his propensity or the propensity for turnover where he plays, but also with a sort of production level number to determine, you know, how productive are you for every one of these bad mistakes, right? So essentially, if you start looking at yardage, at the moment, it's only passing yardage, though, as we talked about, we're going to make some changes and make it even better. But just a raw stat of passing yardage per turnover-worthy play, right? Over the last 5 years, Jameis isn't actually as high as you might expect him to be, right?
Yeah.
This guy is incredibly productive. This year could potentially be leading the league in yards, touchdowns, and interceptions, right? That's the kind of volatility we're talking about. But when you start cranking or start looking at yardage gained per turnover worthy play, he throws so many of them that he's actually below average and, you know, not in a particularly great play. So 139 yards per turnover worthy play, which is exactly the same as Eli over the last 5 years. And
great, that's our comp.
Less than half, closer to a third of what Tom Brady's at. So Brady is at 372 yards.
I love this as a concept.
Right, for every turnover worthy play. Brady is by far and away the highest, right? Unless you count A.J. McCarron because of his two turnover worthy plays.
The thing about... go ahead.
Breeze is a second. So Breeze and Brady are the only two above 300 yards per turnover worthy play. At the other end of the scale, and this is going to make Giants fans quite upset, Daniel Jones is averaging 88 yards per turnover worthy play, right? Which is A, terrible. B, lower than Blaine Gabbert. And so if you look at the, there's only one, two, three, four, there's only five quarterbacks that have a lower number than that. All of them have a smaller sample size than Daniel Jones. And the names on that list is not good.
Not good, yeah.
So the quarterbacks that he is in and around, right? Nathan Peterman, Kevin Hogan, Mark Sanchez, Drew Stanton, EJ Manuel, Paxton Lynch, DeShone Kizer, Derek Anderson.
Yeah, really small samples and not good quarterbacks.
Bryce Petty, Josh Rosen, Zach Mettenberger, Johnny Football, TJ Yates, Landry Jones, Kyle Allen. This is not a list you want to be on, and that's currently where Daniel Jones resides.
No, it's a fascinating concept. You know, the turnover-worthy play component is really strong there. Maybe we should lessen the blow just a little bit. You know, but it is a great way to look at if you're going to put the ball in harm's way, but there's good stuff coming out of it, then you'll be able to, you know, show that with this.
What's also fascinating about this is that very different style quarterbacks can end up in more or less the same area, right? So, you know, you've got the highly volatile quarterback like Baker or like Jameis, but Baker Mayfield is also kind of on that spectrum. Like, he's made a lot of big plays, he's made a lot of bad plays. Basically, in terms of pure yardage per mistake, Derek Carr, Baker Mayfield, and Jacoby Brissett are the same guy. And those are
really different styles.
Different ends of the spectrum.
Right.
Similarly, at the top end, Alex Smith and Patrick Mahomes are in the same kind of ballpark, but you've got hyper-conservative Alex Smith, crazy Brett Favre baller Patrick Mahomes.
It also shows, if you know, Alex Smith's much higher than Derek Carr on this list, right?
Yeah.
And I keep being critical of Derek Carr just because I think he has so much more in him. Like, you know, if he's going to be an Uber Alex Smith, he's not even doing that as well as Alex Smith.
Right. Alex Smith averages almost more than 75 yards additional per mistake, essentially, that Derek Carr does.
Interesting. No, I like it. I think it's a fascinating. Where's Watson on that list? Fascinating concept.
Average to high. Where is he here?
Because Watson's had a high percentage of turnover-worthy plays. This is one of those games. You know, so we've compared these two quarterbacks before. This is why I'm looking forward to this game a lot. Texans, Bucks. We talk about Jameis's volatility, but it always kind of, it's all within a game, right? And it's all within a season. Every season that he's had, Jameis, this is, he lands at a PFF grade of 68 to 73. So we're like, oh, he's crazy. He's volatile, but it doesn't show, it's not like he has a 90 season and then a 50 season. It shows up throw for throw within a game, and it's crazy. We talked about Watson, though. He's got some high-end games. He's got some well below average games. His volatility shows up more week to week,
right?
Which makes this game as crazy as it gets as far as predicting it.
And it also makes it really interesting because if they stick to that kind of script, right, if this becomes a shootout where these guys are both throwing, you know, 300, 400 yards, like Deshaun Watson essentially is averaging, again, like 70, 80 yards more than Jameis for every turnover-worthy play.
Yeah.
All right, so if they get into a shootout where they're both ranking up 300, 400, like by the numbers, Deshaun Watson essentially has another like 80 yards of breathing room before he makes the mistake that costs his team the game. Whereas Jameis, like he's dealing with a ticking time bomb that's like 75 yards less than Watson.
Well, the other big difference here is the Bucs have no receivers.
You sure? Well, you say
Mike
that.
Evans is placed on injured reserve. Chris Godwin, unexpected to play.
But Breshad Perriman has been making plays.
Perriman has been making plays.
Here's the thing. He was an intriguing player coming out of college, right?
Yes. If you look at his, he came out in 2015, right?
Right. And you in particular have been a big proponent of not overreacting to drops, which essentially has been his biggest problem in the NFL, right?
Yeah.
The guy has hands of stone.
Big fan of that.
Or at least has for long periods. A, at the moment, he hasn't. And B, if you get past that, he's still really fast. He's capable of making some big plays. And he's got a YOLO quarterback in Jameis willing to feed him the ball.
You know what I liked about Perryman coming out? He played with Blake Bortles in 2013 in Bortles' draft year. And when you go back and watch Bortles, he is YOLOing it up to Perryman. And Perryman's making play after play. Then he ran like the sub 4.3, right?
Mm-hmm.
At the combine, plus the size. And you're watching, you're like, wow, that speed did kind of show up a little bit. If you can get over... He was one of those weird guys who would drop the easy one but make the contested catch and all that stuff. So, you know, the potential was always there. It's just, like, how much do you want to trot that out there when he's so inconsistent? But definitely an intriguing player right now, especially if you pair it with Jameis. Even if he does end up reverting back to a few drops, if you're going to make a few extra plays, then that's a nice
pair. He's certainly a guy that I think, you know, if you're forced to turn to him as your high-volume guy because everybody else just got hurt, I can see him having success.
Yeah, so he's averaging 17 yards per catch. So far the season has 5 touchdowns. Is it Perryman time?
Yeah.
In Tampa Bay.
That's what I'm saying.
Bruce Arians said, oh, we're just going to have to throw to running backs.
Mm.
I say Jameis doesn't throw to running backs.
Well, there's two problems with that. One, Jameis doesn't throw to running backs. And two, Ronald Jones can't catch the ball.
He's all right.
No, he's not. I mean, he's no.
He only has one drop now.
Yeah, but
this year.
On how many targets?
32.
Right.
He's got 3 on 41 in his career. 3 on 33 with 33 receptions in his career. Not
that's,
as bad
that's
as college.
Not, good.
Not as bad as college.
Yeah, but he's not, I mean, not a good catcher.
All right, which team shows up for the Houston Texans this week?
I have gone with the Bucs, so apparently I'm saying not the good one.
Is this post-injury? Did you wait for the injury reports?
No. I don't know that it changes my mind, though. My mind would have been entirely made based off which Houston team I expected to show up.
Yeah, so they're on. Houston's ready for the downswing. They beat Tennessee after losing to the Broncos. Lose to the Broncos, beat Tennessee in a huge game.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to look ahead again to Tennessee, the Week 17 matchup? But the Texans control the AFC South. I'm picking the Texans, but this would be the letdown game for them. The other thing that's fascinating about the Bucs right now to keep an eye on, I posted the tweet this week. Jamel Dean, highest percentage of forced incompletions in the NFL this year.
Mm-hmm.
His teammate Carlton Davis ranks 5th. So there were two guys in the top 5. Both guys went to Auburn. Both massive corners for the Bucs. I sent you this message earlier today. Chris Harris, free agent. Feels like a nice little... You get the two big guys on the outside. Throw Chris Harris in the slot this offseason. Keep an eye on it in Tampa Bay. If Tampa Bay can improve that secondary for next year, do you roll with Jameis for that one more year? Hopefully we get the higher range of outcomes. And this is the year, for the 7th straight year, Tampa Bay is ready for a breakout for next year.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
But keep an eye on those corners because they're really developing with the Bucs. So it should
just
be a really nice matchup.
With Jameis, it's going to be every year is next year.
Every year is next year. Never know which one it is. All right, let's move on to the next game on Saturday. It's the Buffalo Bills at the New England Patriots. Can you believe it? The AFC East is on the line this late in the season for the Patriots and the Bills. The Bills continue to find ways to win. 17-10 victory last week against the Pittsburgh Steelers. They gave the Patriots all they could handle back in week 4, 13-10. Mm-hmm. New England escaped Buffalo with the win. We talk every week about Buffalo's fundamentally sound defense, inconsistent quarterback play, who's also capable of moving the chains with his legs and has been fantastic throwing at the intermediate level. What are you expecting in this matchup here?
I really like this as a matchup. I think this is kind of fascinating. And the line seems crazy to me, and yet, if anything, all the data we have backs it up, right?
What's the line?
The line is 6.5.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it to an extent, right? It's the Patriots and blah, blah, blah. But we have seen, A, the Bills play them close already. B, the Bills are still winning. They're proving that they're not, you know, a flash in the pan, that this was a legit team. C, the Patriots in particular, like, that offense has never struggled more than it's struggling at the moment.
Yeah, and they're struggling
against good defense.
They're struggling against not so good defenses in recent weeks. They've struggled against the Bills since McDermott got there. Even in Brady's MVP season in 2017, that was McDermott's first year. He did a pretty nice job. They did a nice job against the Patriots last year. The Bills did a nice job against the Patriots. And earlier this year was Brady's worst graded game of the season at Buffalo. So there's a history there.
And I think what the data is saying essentially is we have zero confidence in Josh Allen against a Bill Belichick coach defense.
Against New England's D, yeah.
Winning. So I think this is the data is probably pitching for a game similar to the first one in terms of low-scoring affair that the Patriots essentially we have more confidence in them winning.
But I mean, the Bills play those types of games pretty much every week now anyway.
Right. I think this is a game where the Bills have a very real chance of winning this because of all the things we just talked about. Like, New England's defense is legit, but so is Buffalo's. You know, we've seen them play Baltimore, for example, tougher than pretty much anybody. And the Patriots' offense can't get anything going right now, and they're going up against a legitimate defense that can cover and match up with all the players that they do have that are problems.
These two teams, they squared off last year in Week 16, and we were on here saying, talk about range of outcomes. I mean, in any given week, if I told you Josh Allen threw for three touchdowns or threw for two and ran for two or whatever, you'd be like, oh, yeah, that's reasonable. Or if I told you he went, you know, 12 for 38, you wouldn't, you know, with three picks, you wouldn't be surprised either. There are highs and lows to his game. In that game last year, he did struggle to complete passes at a high level against New England in Week 4. It was one of the worst halves of football, I think, that any quarterback's played all year, as far as missed throws and just straight-up turnover-worthy throws. So Allen hasn't played great against this Patriots D, but he has the ability to make a few big plays and I think make it really, really interesting here. Plus, you have Jonathan Jones, slot corner with the Patriots. He's banged up, unlikely to play. You know,
Julian Edelman, I think, is the big one. Like, he's been questionable. He hasn't been going at practice nearly 100%.
He looked like he was half-speed last week against the Bengals.
Right. Yeah. If he can play, like, I mean, he was the only guy you had that was getting open. If he can't, if he can't even play, you can take the, you know, the double Edelman strategy and apply it to whoever the hell you think is the only guy that can get open. And at which point, like, nobody's getting open.
Yeah, New England's still trying to figure it out. This was also the week last year where they said, okay, a little bit more fullback, a little bit more run game, finish the regular season like that, and that was the strategy through the playoffs. Even though it wasn't really a run first attack,
fullback, which they don't have anymore.
Right, but they. But this was one of the weeks where they made a bit more of an adjustment. Last year at this time, they were losing Josh Gordon, who ironically is also out the same exact week this year.
The Bills,
so they had to make an adjustment.
The Bills' defense is kind of fascinating, right? Because the book on them is that they're not good against the run. A lot of people heading into that Baltimore game, like, Baltimore just run all over them. They suck against the run. Actually, they really don't. If you look at the numbers, they're one of the best in terms of yards per play against the run and the percentage of, like, stuffs and short tackles and that kind of thing. What happens, though, is that they're also amongst the worst at missed tackles. So it's boom or bust, right? They're either stopping you or somebody's falling off a tackle and you're breaking 15 yards on the back end. It's actually on a sort of down-to-down basis, they're a pretty decent run defense. But they have a tendency to fall off these tackles and get gashed.
That's what's happened with McDermott's defense. In 2017, it was like, wow, this is a sneaky good coverage unit, but you can run all over them. Last year, they improved a little bit in the run game. This year, they've improved a little bit again, I think. And then, you know, the coverage unit has stayed really good. That's why the Bills have one of the best defenses in the NFL. Tre'Davious White playing at a high level. He got hurt a little bit Sunday night, but came back into the game. So just a lot of good matchups.
So they have the second fewest total rush yards allowed before contact of any team. But they have one of the highest yards after contact figures because they miss a whole bunch of tackles.
Yeah, they missed 16 last week. So you have to wonder, if you're in New England, is this a game with the tackling issues where you can actually get the short passing game going again or get the run game going again? It would take Sony Michel missing, you know, forcing some missed tackles, Rex Burkhead. They did run the ball pretty well against the Bengals last week. So,
but that's what's interesting, right? Because you might think that, okay, let's go back to this run-heavy game plan. This is the way to win. But fundamentally, like, the Bills are pretty well equipped to stop that. It's just it relies on them missing tackles in order for that to have success, essentially, which is not the safest bet, or not the safest thing in the world to bet on.
We've been saying New England has had opportunities to get their pass game going in recent weeks, haven't done it. Doesn't look like the week to do it. A lot of New England beat writers showing Brady, like, shaking out his arm and stuff like that after throws. He's been on and off the injury report with an elbow injury. It did look like, I mean, that was, he missed a lot of throws that he doesn't normally miss against the Bengals. So there's just a lot at play here, the old man. I'm still taking New England here. You think Buffalo pulls the upset?
I do. Did I say that in my picks? I did.
That's what you thought at least 2 days ago.
Yeah, I still think it.
So there we go. Rounding out.
You and I are tied in picks, by the way. We've gone two different
ways. So Saturday's going to determine a lot.
Yeah.
You also, oh, wow.
We have a lot of differences. This is gonna do a lot for our picks.
Total. You made some bad picks, though.
I don't think so.
Starting with those first two. Rounding out the Saturday slate. I'm going to be killing you by the end of this week.
No.
Rounding out the Saturday slate.
Yes.
NFC West battle.
Mm-hmm.
Los Angeles Rams at the San Francisco 49ers. 49ers destroyed them. Well, dominated on the defensive side of the ball in the first matchup. It's a huge matchup. Niners battling for that number one seed still. Very much in the mix. Rams, disappointing effort last week against the Cowboys with their playoff hopes on the line.
Coming off an absolute embarrassment last week where they just got abused by the Dallas Cowboys. You would hope for some kind of reaction this week.
Yeah.
And honestly, if they don't get it, it could get ugly because the 49ers are every bit, if significantly better, in fact, than the Dallas Cowboys. So, yeah, the Rams like need to legitimately bounce back, figure out what they're doing. The biggest problem we talked about on the podcast on Monday was they just got abused in the trenches on both sides of the ball.
Right.
The 49ers are capable of doing that to them. Like, their defensive line is dominant. Their offensive line is good. It might not be as good as Dallas's, but it's...
They scheme it up as far as the run game goes, too. I mean, they can create...
So, either way, the same problems are in place, right? The things that cost them last week against Dallas are very real threats in this game as well. They need to have come up with answers over the course of the week.
Yeah, man. The Niners, they were inevitably going to, I think, regress a little bit. They were so good in the first half of the year. They had this... I mean, they've been playing playoff game after playoff game, beat New Orleans in New Orleans, and then lose to the Falcons at home.
Mm.
Just weird stuff, right? But it is tough to just keep your team on point week after week. Plus, the Falcons, any given week, they can explode on you. You know
they
what I
can't,
mean?
Yeah.
So, in this one, division matchup, they handled the Rams the first time. I think the 49ers take care of business. But, you know, the Rams have a lot to play for pride-wise here after last week.
Yeah, I just hope there is some kind of reaction because last week was miserable, and if they have to go through that again, it's going to be pretty rough. Of course, they're likely to be down Pro Bowl-level corner, Troy Hill.
Troy Hill.
That's a big blow.
Broken thumb. Not completely ruled out to play, but less likely. And then the other thing I'm looking for, Jalen Ramsey with the Rams.
Mm-hmm.
When that trade was made, a lot of people made the point like, oh, Jalen Ramsey's not going to help you beat the 49ers. And it's like, well, I like the idea of drafting to beat teams in your division, but you really only play them twice. And it's not even a lock that the 49ers are going to be the best team that you're competing with over the next few years. But I do wonder, Ramsey didn't play in that first matchup. Does he match up with George Kittle? And the reason why people said he wouldn't match up well with the 49ers is because George Kittle's the top weapon, right? Do we see a little bit of Jalen Ramsey and George Kittle? We thought we'd see Ramsey and Gronk a couple years ago. We didn't really see much of it.
Part of that, though, was that, like, you know, in what was essentially a foreshadowing of today's problems, the Patriots had Gronk and nothing else. So you actually needed to think about how do we stop Gronk and then, you know, we'll work out the rest after that.
Yeah.
The 49ers, I think that was probably true for a period, but now you have to worry about Emmanuel Sanders, Deebo Samuel. They actually have receivers to concern yourself with other than
Juszczyk,
George Kittle. So I don't know that that would happen.
No, the Niners are definitely building their receiving core the way I would want it built. You know, the ability to have, you have a nice tight end that can control the middle of the field and create outside mismatches on the outside if you want to, you know, deploy him there. But then you get some nice route runners as receivers. They've gotten, you know, random good play, Kendrick Bourne, and, you know, you got some size guys. You can scheme up stuff. You can trust guys in one-on-one situations. There's a lot of different ways to win if you're the 49ers.
They're also almost the poster child for, like, building running backs, how you should build a running back, because almost everybody they have there is undrafted. The problem is they didn't take advantage of that because they went and grabbed them all in free agency and paid a ton of money to
get
them.
They did pay.
Tevin Coleman is a third round pick.
They got him from the Falcons.
But like Matt Breida, Mostert, Juszczyk, these are all undrafted guys. So if you were like, this is a team that schemes up the run well, calls plays well, you draft any old group of or grab any old group of undrafted running backs, put them behind this offense, it'll look great.
You know what I like even
problem
more?
Is they, you know, they actually paid a ton of money to do that.
But you know what I like more about those guys?
They're good.
They're fast.
Well, yeah.
I think Al Davis in his, you know, just penchant for just speed. Just give me the speed guys. I feel like it was harder to deploy the speed guys back then, even though it was more of a vertical passing game. I think it was a little bit harder. I think,
but he also wanted it at all positions.
He did.
Like, he would draft corner if you ran a 4-2.
Yeah, that's
not helpful.
That's always going to be an issue. But I think in today's NFL, you know, if we're going to say that running backs are interchangeable, right, and they're dependent on their run blocking, and you've got the jet sweep game, you have all these other ways to get the ball to these guys in space, I would get the speed guys. Because if you could build everything else around them, all you're trying to do is put them in space, right? And then I don't care as much. I want you to miss tackles and all that stuff, but I want you to stress the D. Mostert is fast. Tevin Coleman, fast. Matt Breida, he's a good athlete. I mean, they've done a really good job. They've got these athletes, and they find creative ways to get them into space as well. And they've got all these receivers and George Kittle. They do have this well-rounded group of playmakers now.
Yeah. I mean, I think particularly in this kind of offense, speed is more useful than it is in some other systems where you actually need a running back to, you know, pick his way through, define gaps at the line of scrimmage, measure his pace to let blocking set up. Like, at this point, you can have guys that essentially just run towards the edge, and when they see the crease, just accelerate and fly.
Yeah. Anyway, I like the way the Niners are built. And I think they bounce back after last week's disappointing loss to the Falcons. They get the Rams this week and then at Seattle to finish the season. So they've got it's a tough road for them to, you know, jump back into that number one seed spot. They're down at 5 right now at this exact moment. I'm taking the Niners here. You guys well?
Yep. That's crazy how they went from wrapping up the number one seed to now they're the 5th seed.
I mean, I feel like we've been saying this for 3 years now. The NFC is so competitive. And then, like I said, the Niners have been playing playoff games. Mm-hmm. The Packers and Vikings are playing a playoff game Monday night. That's just what the NFC is right now. And the AFC, Patriots, Bills, playoff caliber game. All right, let's get to some of the Sunday action. Carolina Panthers at the Indianapolis Colts.
Will Greer starts.
Did you send me a note here?
Yeah, I did.
I didn't get it.
No. Didn't have any effect.
It's the Will Greer game.
Yes.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. There's nothing we can see from this game that means anything about Will Greer, sadly.
Man, I wish we didn't have the smart guys feeding data to us. Because it just takes all our hot takes away.
Mm-hmm.
This is the game where we define what Will Greer
Here's
is.
Here's the thing. One of two things is going to happen in this game. Either Will Greer stinks, looks the same guy he was in preseason and the Senior Bowl, in which case Daniel Jones fans are going to be all up on my mentions on Twitter, banging on about how Jones is way better than Will Greer. Look. Or
one guy that remembers. And
no, it's not. It's a lot of them. There's a lot of them. Trust me. Will Greer is going to ball out. And I am going to find the last time a Giants fan said that to me and reply back to him.
All right, let's practice your lines here.
Mm-hmm.
Sam, Will Greer, it was a disappointing effort. He was horrible.
It's one game. We wanted to crown Daniel Jones after one game. How's that worked out?
Will Greer absolutely shredded the Indianapolis Colts. Good short, intermediate, deep accuracy. He looks like the real deal.
Told you he was better than Daniel Jones. Eat me, Giants fan.
Well done. You are ready for social media. You're ready.
Got it.
For no matter what Will Greer throws out there. At least it's in a dome.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Pristine throwing conditions. The thing about Will Greer, so there's some things about his evaluation, right?
Yeah.
He did a really nice job completing passes down the field.
Yeah.
In West Virginia. And then I looked at it and I'm like, you know, we're always trying to extract what are the things that translate to the NFL. And I can't remember the exact numbers, but as far as like his big time throws and everything, even though he hit them all at a high rate, there's so many just over the shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a lot of go balls.
Yeah.
There's a lot of passes that you still have to hit in the NFL, but that's not a big chunk of where big time throws come from in the NFL. You got to hit the 20-yard dig. You got to hit the deep out. You really do have to hit some level of those throws, the deep crossing route, a lot of the passes that weren't exactly Will Greer staples college.
That what was strange to me is that, like, in the Senior Bowl when, you know, the scheme and all that kind of stuff disappears and it's just you throwing, like, his accuracy and ability to pass just disappeared, right? So even if his Senior Bowl was nothing but him nailing go balls like a champ, and then like unable to hit a dig or, you know, anything like that. That would have made some sense to me. But he just completely turned to crap at the Senior Bowl and looked like he had never, like, just couldn't pass. Looked like Christian Hackenberg out there. Looked terrible. Preseason didn't look a whole lot better. Now, that at least you can start to talk a bit more about how, you know, the whole NFL scheme, overwhelm, backups, all this kind of stuff. There's more excuses for the preseason. But the Senior Bowl, everything that he was doing well at West Virginia, he was not doing well at the Senior Bowl. That, to me, was strange.
I thought he would look better there.
Right.
Yeah, obviously.
So that part I don't understand.
Here are the numbers I pulled out as far as the potential negatives in his game. 63% of his big-time throws were those over-the-shoulder, mm-hmm. bucket-type throws. The NFL average is only 41%. So he was only over 20% higher of his big-time throws were just over-the-shoulder type of throws, which are nice ones to hit. It's just a less common throw in the NFL.
Yeah.
You know, NFL quarterbacks throw that far less. College is really about spread it out, find man coverage, throw deep balls, mm-hmm. right? And that's what the West Virginia offense was. The other number that was really concerning, QB grades when moved off the spot. This is an interesting one when you look at the draft class. Will Greer was number 11 among notable players in the class, like 31.5 grade. Kyler was number 1, 84.7, was fantastic. Number 3, Gardner Minshew, 65.9. Ryan Finley was actually number 4. I was a little surprised by that. Dwayne Haskins was not good, 54 grade.
Right.
Drew Locke wasn't good. He was a 50. Daniel Jones was a 39. Jarrett Stidham was a 35, but Greer was the worst out of all of them. So when you moved him off the spot just a little bit, it wasn't going well for Greer. But he did make, you know, a lot of nice throws, completed passes at 10-plus yards, which generally is a good thing. It's a good thing. That's generally what translates at the next level.
There was so much to like about his tape that I think he's an intriguing player. It was definitely concerning his Senior Bowl performance and preseason. And as much as, you know, I led this off by saying there's nothing that he can do in this week or the last 2 weeks that means anything, essentially, given sample sizes in the NFL. If he comes out and stinks for two more games, I mean, aside from anything else, he's not going to get another chance, right? Like this will be his opportunity. And as much as we are aware of the fact that the sample size of two games is effectively meaningless, like I say, after one game, the New York Giants official Twitter account came out and was like trash talking people for their Daniel Jones takes, right? Jones. Since then, he has thrown, I think, more turnover worthy plays than anybody else in the NFL, or at least right up there
dropped.
With the worst, right?
Because a lot of them are fumbles.
Sure. But he's, you know, anyone that was making that case right then is at least very much quieten down because, you know, there's been more than enough bad to make you a little bit concerned about being too bullish. But if he comes out and it's just a complete disaster for two games, like if nothing else, the Panthers are going to be done with it because I don't think the NFL appreciates that level of sample size with these things.
I think the comparison right now is Drew Locke in the preseason looked overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. He looked like a guy coming from a college-y type of offense that was having a rough transition. That's what Greer looked like in the preseason.
Yeah.
When Locke got to the, you know, Locke hasn't been perfect and he just had a rough game against Kansas City, but he's at least looked comfortable and like an NFL quarterback and he's showing his high end ability.
Right.
At least showing the traits and the throws that he made in college. If Greer at least shows that and has some level of comfort, even if he makes a few mistakes, misses a few throws, that's fine.
Sure.
Just don't look like a disaster.
But even that, you can paint the narrative, right? So if he has the exact two games that Drew Locke had, right, you can come out of that and you say, okay, he was overwhelmed at the beginning. We know that offense at West Virginia is kind of quirky. It's going to take some getting used to. He wasn't ready in the preseason. It took him, you know, a season of being in the room, learning the offense, getting some mental reps and, you know, watching Kyle Allen do his thing. And then we finally broke him out in week 16. He was more ready. And now we can go into next season. He's a legitimate, you know, consideration, right? But equally, it could just be, well, he just had two games that were slightly better than average, and this doesn't mean anything.
Oh, man, Sam, you're just...
So that's the Drew Locke thing, right? It's
becoming more and more like me every day.
If you want to look at it positively, you say that's exactly what happened to him, right? He wasn't ready in the preseason. He was overwhelmed. You know, he sat on the bench for a while. He got to learn, and by the time he went out there for real, he was ready, or at least more ready. Or you could just say, well, look, he was disastrous then. He spiked up a little bit for these two games. And if you gave him six more, he'd dive back or, you know, it's all, I'm not saying it's all random, but a two-game sample size is nothing, and you can paint a narrative to say whatever you want.
Will Grier making the start this week. I can't wait to see it, but it means nothing.
Meaningless.
Thank you, Sam.
But I will be using it if it helps my case.
Colts on the other side. If there's a defense that you're going up against, maybe, you know, they were sitting in zone quite a bit against the Saints, getting picked apart by Drew Brees. There could be, you know,
yeah,
some simple reads there.
As long as Will Grier is Drew Brees, they're in good shape.
Darius Leonard been playing pretty well. Anything on the Colts here? For Colts fans that are tuning in. Jacoby Brissett, you know, look, Booger made the statement at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Jacoby Brissett's a franchise quarterback. You could see it. I mean, it depends on how you're defining.
Did you see him put out the tweet that was like, which one of these guys would you take for the next 5 years?
Yeah, and Brissett was there with like Dak, Wentz,
and Trubisky.
Trubisky.
Yeah.
Boog.
Like
Boog,
between Boog. That and drawing a dick on the telestrator, he was in rare form. He really was.
Wasn't a great night for Boog. It was a great night for Breeze, not for Boog. Look, I think Colts fans are pretty realistic about this. They're in the same boat as the Panthers going into this offseason. Who is our quarterback? They've got one more year, right, of Brissett locked up at a reasonable price. But like they're looking to the future.
I mean, he's
this team's different. If Andrew Luck's there, they need to go find the Andrew Luck level quarterback.
Like we were never his grade was always worse than his box score numbers all season long. So yeah. When people were saying actually he's playing really like Chris Sims had him as one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL,
people were talking about him in the MVP race early on,
right? And we were saying, okay, guys, that's insane. He's not nearly that good. Although the stats look good, even from that point, he's regressed in terms of PFF grading, and the stats have come down a little bit. But they're still really quite good.
Yeah.
Like this is one of the more big diversions in terms of PFF grade and stats that we've had for a while now. 18 touchdowns and 6 picks. Now, at one point, I think it was 14-3, so it's definitely swung back. But like those are still really healthy numbers for a guy that's really not playing well.
He had a ridiculously high touchdown percentage early in the year. One of those things that is really tough to sustain. So look, Brissett still has to prove a lot. Also got this great nugget from Eric Eager. He came out, you know, put WAR out there last week, the wins above replacement, just explained it to the folks on the website and everything. Quentin Nelson, the only offensive lineman who's the most valuable player on his offense.
And that's lineman, not guard, because guards are the lowest worth of the five offensive line positions.
When I've looked through the numbers, though, elite guard play is pretty valuable. So Nelson is giving you that 91.7 grading, much better than the rest of the guards around the NFL. So he's the other guy to watch.
Except Brandon Brooks.
In this one. Yeah, Brooks is up there as well. All right, Sam, your shirt looks awesome. Where's it from?
Despite the cacti?
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
I was wandering in here wearing my cactus-laden proper cloth shirt.
Yes.
And Eric Eager told me it was a nice shirt. He said.
Liked it.
Yeah.
It's growing on me.
That's now multiple people that like the cactus.
I wouldn't pick it, but I like it. It all comes from Proper Cloth. They are the best fabric producers in the world, or they get their clothes from the best fabric producers in the world. Each one of their shirts goes through the extensive quality control testing so that you're getting the absolute very best in quality, in craftsmanship, and it fits. It fits big old guys like me. You know, it was a big move when I started getting shirts that fit and sleeves that fit as well.
Yeah, I would imagine that's a problem for you.
This is another shade of blue. I've got 9 million.
You can't just order off the peg, no?
No. Mm. Can't just go to the store. If I spill coffee on my shirt, which I do a lot, I can't just go to the store and get
so
a new one.
So to an extent, I can go to the store and it's like, as long as I get like a 16-inch collar, I'm good.
Right.
You, that would look like
I need tent. Like the 13 different points they measure so it all fits properly. So you need to also stop wearing shirts that don't fit. Start looking your best with a custom fitted shirt from Proper Cloth. Propercloth.com/PFF. That's the place to go. And we're going to give you $20 off your first shirt if you use the promo code PFF20. Go see why Proper Cloth is the best custom shirt maker there is. Propercloth.com/PFF. Don't forget, you can customize it over 30. They say 30 different style options, but it's really like hundreds of thousands when you really.
Oh, I mean, it's millions.
Are they underselling themselves on this copy here? So customer service is outstanding.
That's before you even factor in being able to put the custom trim pieces.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Like there's 30 different just, you know,
well, at least
of those. Customer service is great and the timing is great. I cannot believe how quickly they turn these around, especially for custom made stuff. Usually
those
waiting,
things fly in.
Usually waiting a couple months. Yeah. So propercloth.com/PFF. Use the promo code PFF20 to get $20 off your first shirt. Speaking of fitting well, you know who's fitting well into the first overall pick? Cincinnati Bengals.
Not your smoothest transition, but I appreciate the effort.
I'm gonna just go crazy. My new thing is just to have
slick ass
transition and everything. I'll stumble into a good one at some point.
Yeah. Segways.
Segways, yeah. I know what it is. Not like the thing you drive, but like a, you know, Segway.
Yeah.
Cincinnati Bengals.
Segway, by the way, would be hilarious.
No, we're not doing it. Brian wanted me to get on a Lime in Atlanta.
I kind of want to see you on one of those.
And I told him that you wanted to see me on it, and then I was going to fall on. We would have gone viral and all that stuff. Maybe it's part of our new content strategy, but until I get the...
You certainly can't do it without either me or somebody filming it.
I will not have my first...
That's all you need to
Segway
promise me, right?
Slash Lime.
We can have the argument.
Without,
yeah. We can have the argument back and forth as to when you're actually going to do it. But at least promise me that you will not have a ride on a Segway, Bird, or Lime without allowing me or somebody else to film the thing happening.
That's fair.
How would you even you reaching the handle of a Segway? It'd be like, you know, like the,
there's no adjustments for height or anything.
You know,
like
the
that?
Clowns with the little, the, like the tiny bicycles, and they're all like hunched over like this.
All right, I already got Buddy the Elf or whatever comparisons from my wife. Thank you. And man, she's been harsh on me the last couple of weeks too. She said I embarrassed the family with that missed dunk that made our social media
you
account.
Did. I mean, that was pretty.
I appreciate her honesty though, her candor. We practice radical candor at the Palazzolo House. Mm. So you know,
this is what you would look like on a Segway.
Come on, stop it.
It is. That's what it would be like. Let's see. Can people see that from here?
No, podcast listeners can't see it.
Over there.
No, they gotta check
well, the
out
people YouTube. On YouTube can, kind of. You would have this tiny little contraption that you would be, you know. I'd laugh a lot. That's all I'm saying.
Bengals, Dolphins, Sam, talk.
Okay. Bengals, Dolphins.
This game lost a little luster. This was supposed to be the battle. It would have been flexed to Sunday Night Football.
How come
like, this
all
was
these teams
be...
at the bottom won games? Why couldn't they all just, you know, shoot for the stars?
Yeah,
which is ironically the Dolphins. So the hashtag, like all the way through the start of this mess, was tank for Tua. They might have done that perfectly, despite taking themselves well out of the first.
Yeah, you don't
overall
have to be
pick.
Number one overall. I mean, Joe Burrow, I think, has solidified himself as number one. We've mentioned that. I see our friend Paul Daner, Bengals beat writer, and a lot of the Bengals folks, like, really debating, like, hey, if you have a game winning drive opportunity here, what if you take a knee? Like, is that bad for the game? Is that disrespecting the game? Or is it just a good franchise decision? Like, we're not going to take a chance at winning our last two games and losing out on this guy from LSU who looks like a stud quarterback.
Yeah. I mean, it would seem very ridiculous to do it now. You know what I mean? Like, your chance to do that was to just not put Dalton back in the lineup and leave Ryan Finley out there to drown.
Yeah, there's ways to, like...
That's what I'm saying, right? You could essentially massage the whole thing by leaving out the terrible quarterback and just watching him sink. But instead, you put back the guy that gave you a shot to win. He did. And now it's like, well, do we completely take the piss now and just go, yeah, we can win this game, but actually we're going to take a knee. Like, that would seem really bad.
Yeah, maybe. I say do what's best for the organization. I mean, I remember in 2011... last game of the season, Jaguars faced the Colts. The loser got the first overall pick.
Hmm.
The Jags had already drafted Blaine Gabbert the previous year, and it's like, looks like Blaine Gabbert. He was like a minus 56 back in the old PFF system his rookie year. And Colts lost. They got Andrew Luck.
Right. If somebody did that if the Bengals did that this week or even next week, that's the kind of thing that would prompt some kind of giant, like, conniption from Park Avenue and them changing
whatever the NBA is dealing with
teams
like,
or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Just a team sucking and sort of consciously going with a bad quarterback for the back end of the year, you'll get away with that. If you go out there and legitimately take a knee on a drive you could win the game with, there would be some major repercussions coming out of that.
Anyway, if you're a Bengals or a Dolphins fan, Watch the young guys. Who's going to be a part of the rebuild?
No, screw the young guys. Watch Ryan Fitzpatrick.
All right, watch
Ryan Fitzpatrick does not have long left in this league, and we need to treasure every moment that remains because Fitzpatrick and his YOLO passes.
And leading the Dolphins in rushing.
Yeah, but do you see how many? It's like 250 yards or something.
That's what it's amazing.
He is a glorious sight to behold, and we should all treasure that for as long as remains.
That's why I'm taking the Dolphins to win.
Yeah, but how utterly inept was Kalen Ballage that, like, Ryan Fitzpatrick now leads the team in rushing. And he didn't even take the rushing lead from Kalen Ballage.
I hate Ballage so much.
He took it from Mark Walton, who was only there like a couple of weeks before he did his latest thing to get arrested.
Moving on.
You're not going to do the Bengals? You're just nothing?
I said I took the what?
You're not even going to comment on them? You just...
Dalton played like Fitz last week with a bunch of picks. Cut it out. We just discussed the Bengals and what they should do.
We're both taking Miami? Oh, God.
Yeah. William Jackson, Devontae Parker? They going to match up? There you go.
A little bit.
Watch it. Got to give everybody something to watch. Pittsburgh Steelers at the New York Jets. Can the Duck bounce back?
Do Ducks bounce?
Nope.
No, they don't seem like a bouncy species to me.
I think Duck kind of is what he is. We saw a lot of it on Sunday night. He just looked like an undrafted free agent the other night. It was against the Bills' defense. That's tough.
Right. We said that going in. The guy named Duck was unlikely to do great against one of the better defenses in the NFL.
Sam Darnold has been playing. Look, he's playing, you know, a little bit cleaner football than he was earlier in the year.
So that's the interesting side to me in this game, right, is that now Sam Darnold is going up against a legit defense.
Right.
The Steelers have the best pressure rate of anybody in the NFL. Well over 40%. And 40% is that, you know, the first of those interesting lines of demarcation. If you're getting pressured more than 40% of your snaps, you're in trouble. If you're getting pressured on more than 45% of your snaps, you're in real trouble.
The Steelers are also very close to having four guys get up over 50 pressures. You got TJ Watt with 73, our highest graded edge defender, which JJ took exception to on Twitter. I saw that.
Did he? What did he say?
Yeah, he didn't really. He was just kind of like, he loves his brother. He was like, oh, this is interesting or something. Something like that.
Huh.
You know, because JJ's still number four, but TJ's number one.
Right.
In our edge rankings.
But JJ understands that he's not playing anymore, right?
No, he was joking around with like interesting development or something like that. I don't know. He was joking around. So TJ is number one. As far as edge defender grades go, 91 overall. Cam Hayward, 56 pressures. Javon Hargrave has 46, and Bud Dupree has 46. Now, last week, I expected these guys to get up over 50, but, you know, Bud had zero, so...
It would be something incredibly fitting if Bud was the reason that didn't happen.
If he just stays on 46 over the last couple weeks.
Or gets, like, three.
Yeah, just gets three over the next couple... Anyway, the Steelers are bringing it from all angles. It's going to be tough for Darnold, but I think it's a good matchup. Sam's doing some nice things.
Cameron Hayward is having the Fletcher Cox season of... You know, second best guy on the interior after Aaron Donald. And because it's the second best after Aaron Donald, nobody's talking about it. Like, Cameron Hayward is having a career year. The dude has 56 total pressures, which is the third most among interior players behind Donald and Kenny Clark.
Yeah, Clark's been fantastic.
Cameron Hayward has been a beast. And he's been doing it without, you know, Stephon Tuitt next to him. Nobody's even talking about the season Aaron Donald is having, let alone the season anybody... second best Aaron Donald is having. But like, this is the next in the great line of guys that is like the clear second best interior rusher after Donald.
They should
join a club.
We've done this before with Donald because you were making the case, hey, he's easily the defensive player of the year, but they just gave up 250 yards on the ground or whatever it is. So yeah. Somebody's like, well, that can't happen.
Uh-huh.
The team just gave up 200 something yards.
Or
so there's no way he's good.
Did he even play on Sunday? He was completely anonymous. He's like, no, the difference, like, I didn't notice him because he didn't get a sack is not the same thing as was completely anonymous.
Yeah, so, like, people aren't, the hype isn't there for Donald this year.
It's not. He's going to miss out on Defensive Player of the Year this year simply because last year he was chasing the sack record.
Yeah, and also, just people are used to it. This happens with the Heisman all the time. If a guy wins the Heisman in, like, as a sophomore or a junior, and then he puts up the same numbers the next year... You're just like, oh, I've seen that.
Right,
before.
And it happens at MVP as well. Like it goes to somebody else the next year, even though it should go back-to-back to somebody because they just don't want to do that.
You're just bored. You just get bored picking for the same guy.
Right. Donald should win it this year. Won't, probably. But Cameron Hayward That is an interesting group, by the way. You can have Calais Campbell, Fletcher Cox, Cameron Hayward. There's probably a couple other guys that have been like the clear second guy to Donald. They should join a little get-together, a WhatsApp group they could have.
See, I would do it at the Combine with all like, the former Browns coaches. All the former Browns coaches get together at the Combine every year. It's got to be a great party. So many people there.
What do you think they talk about?
I think they just get drunk.
But yeah, but
pretty sure that's the majority of the Combine.
Yeah. Just bitch about the whole situation. It still sucks.
I think it's just an excuse to get together.
Yeah, I know. But
and expense it to whatever team you're working
for
now.
Well, that's possible. But
or they're all still getting paid by the Browns. So they charge it to the
possible.
Browns. It could be it. Anyway, I'm taking the Steelers. You?
I would think so.
I know. You're taking the Steelers.
Okay,
so
yes. Read it. Good.
I was just trying to make conversation.
Huh. Well done.
It is a podcast. Another great game. New York Giants at the Washington Redskins. Daniel Jones, Dwayne Haskins won.
One.
Case Keenum started the first game, right?
Of course. No. Wasn't Jones just airmailing the ball to Quentin Dunbar multiple times?
No, Jones was there. I think Haskins wasn't starting then.
Oh, Haskins. Didn't he say he got sick watching the tape of the first?
Well, he came in.
So he did play.
On 17 attempts.
So they both played.
Yeah, but it's not a... They didn't start against each
you
other.
You only get the one if you started the game?
Yeah, it's not like a matchup. Poor Haskins had to... I'm pretty sure. Let's double check. He had to watch.
Well, either way,
yeah,
Haskins was disgusted at himself how he played in that first game.
Yeah, because he had a
Daniel Jones should have been disgusted with himself because of the amount of times he was throwing the ball at Quentin Dunbar. Yeah. And by at him, I mean like right to his hands, not, you know, in his coverage.
Jones was fine. He had a 65 grade.
Yeah, in spite of throwing the ball at Quentin Dunbar like three times.
Yeah, I know. He did a nice job.
That really started his run of spectacular turnover-worthy play frequency.
Yeah, and at the time, I think he was just coming off. He had the nice game against, well, pretty good game against the Bucs. The hyped-up game against the Bucs.
Yes.
And then he had this game where they won, despite, you know, him playing just okay. And then it did kind of spiral downward. But impression was already made.
Yeah, I'm not even that down on Daniel Jones. I think he's shown already more this season than I thought he would if he got thrown out there to start. And he makes a lot of big plays. Like, there's a reason that people still think he's great, even though he throws more turnover-worthy plays or has more turnover-worthy plays than, like, anybody else. But at some point, that frequency is way too high and needs to be dialed down. Now, I think I agree with some people that say it's a good thing that a lot of them have been fumbles for slightly different reasons. I think a lot of people think that because they're fumbles, he's just being strip-sacked, and therefore they're not his fault. They're the offensive lines. That's not true because we're downgrading the ones that are his fault and he has more of those.
Yeah, we separate. We mentioned this all the time. We separate the ones that he really can't
avoid. So I don't think it's a good thing because it's not his fault and therefore it's fixable by just getting better pass protection, you know, like Nate Solder. But I think it is a good thing because I think that part of his game can be fixed easier and will almost be fixed automatically just by playing longer. So this idea of, you know, young quarterbacks hold the ball longer, which increases the amount of pressure they face, which causes a lot of these problems. So even though he's essentially the architect of his own issues in terms of being the reason there's so much pressure in the first place, by and large, I think that fixes itself over the long term by just the game speeding or his processing speeding up and the game slowing down for him. Therefore, he gets rid of the ball quicker. Therefore, he takes fewer sacks. Therefore, the forced fumbles happen less. But he's also throwing a lot of terrible passes as well.
Yeah.
And like somewhere along the line, that needs to fix itself as well.
So at this point, though, if you're looking at Daniel Jones versus Dwayne Haskins.
Yes.
Much more encouraged by what Jones has shown and what he's
yes, though in
of.
The last couple of weeks, that's swinging.
Haskins has been a little bit better. And again, you know, like grade wise, they're very similar. They're actually 64.2 and 64.3.
Right, and it's a great example of the differences in terms of
the construction.
High volatility yes. versus hyper-conservatism.
Haskins' turnover-worthy play percentage is actually one of the best in the league.
Correct, and what's interesting, when you go back to that metric that we created earlier in the show, like Haskins, 246 yards for every turnover-worthy play. Jones is at 88.
Yeah, and I like the concept of the metric, but the more I'm listening to it, it does really weigh strongly to the conservative type of quarterback.
Well, not necessarily, but the point is, if you throw an absolute ton of turnover-worthy, like the point, the general premise is that turnover-worthy plays are really, really bad, right? But a huge amount of the determining factor of how bad is how productive you are in between them. Right. Now, if you're Daniel Jones ultimately is not at all productive between those turnover-worthy plays because there are so many of them. It's not that he isn't productive. He's actually very productive, right? But he is making so many turnover-worthy plays that the gap between them is really small. Like, he's 88 yards. He's averaging less than 100 yards for every time he puts the ball in harm's way. That's terrible. In a game where nothing is more important than turnovers, essentially, in terms of literally correlating to wins and losses, he is as careless with the ball as any quarterback in the NFL. And if you want to put him in a group, he's careless to the degree of a bunch of catastrophically bad quarterbacks.
But I already said, if you've got, like I broke down in the Jameis article, even if you get the same production from Jones, I'm going to break this down with Trubisky later too. Even if you get the same exact play, the range of outcomes for the volatile guy could lead to
high-end seasons. This isn't a like-for-like thing.
It's harder when you're that safe. Here's the PFF grade that really separates them. The fumble grade. We talked about how much we downgrade Daniel Jones for all those fumbles. A 28.1 fumble grade, which is horrible, obviously. And Haskins is at 90.3 because of all the things that he's done, he just hasn't had, you know, those disastrous plays in the pocket or on scrambles or whatever it might be where he's fumbling. With Haskins, we're seeing some of the natural passing instincts and everything. I'm seeing some of like the different arm angles and like some of the stuff Lamar's doing really well. But with Haskins, it still feels like a little too mechanical and inconsistent.
Right, he has been way too conservative, but I think he is cranking that in the right direction. But the other point is, so it's not just hyper-conservative quarterbacks do better in this, right? Like Mitchell Trubisky has a ton of turnover-worthy plays, but he's averaging 180 yards
between them.
So my point, like, that's a whole 100 more than Daniel Jones.
All right, stop trashing Daniel.
I'm not trashing him. I'm simply saying,
just relax,
that the turnover-worthy plays are too big a problem right now, and he's not doing enough to overcome it.
Can you give me a dimes per turnover-worthy play metric?
Yes, but not.
But we would call
right
it big-time throw to turnover-worthy play ratio. Anyway, it's Jones-Haskins 1. You'll all be tuning in Sunday afternoon.
It's a little more than a half. It's half a dime with a nickel. The nickel per turnover-worthy play.
So a nickel's worth of dimes per every
turnover-worthy play, more or less.
Add that stat to the mix, Rick, upstairs, PFF Ultimate and Premium. I'm taking the Giants in this one. Where are you going?
Washington.
That's a mistake.
I'm going with the better quarterback.
Baltimore Ravens at the Cleveland Browns, which we'll get to in a minute, because we're going to tell you about our friends over at Western and Southern. It doesn't matter if it's football or financial wellness. The right questions will always give you the best chance for a win. Western and Southern has partnered with us here at PFF to give you a chance for an up-close and personal look at the X's and O's that'll lead to both financial and football success. Thank you for... You're trying to underline them?
Yeah. What happened to our...
Screwed it up.
Oh, man.
Looking for insight on your financial future or need an inside-the-huddle tip? Head to westernsouthern.com/ask-chris to ask Western and Southern and PFF your most pressing questions. Can we not write on this right now?
No.
Oh, it's because it's zoomed in or something. Now we screwed it up.
I mean, I didn't. Someone else screwed up.
WesternSouthern.com/ask-chris. Ask us anything. Really, ask Chris anything.
Yeah, not so much us. Him or him.
You could even win tickets to the big game.
Yeah.
Get over there right now. WesternSouthern.com/ask-chris. He answers the questions as well.
Well, yeah.
Are those the ones he's answering on social media?
Yes.
Oh, you could be social media famous, maybe, too, if you ask a good enough question. So get there right now and check it out. Ravens at the Browns. It's a rematch. One of the two teams to beat the Ravens this year.
Right.
The Browns.
Yeah. That seems hard to believe now, doesn't it?
It's Baker Lamar 3 as well.
3. What's the score? 1-1?
1-1.
1-1. Yeah.
Yeah. They're like the same guy.
Yeah. That's heading in opposite directions pretty quickly.
Yeah, I would say so.
The Baker thing is interesting, right?
What is this? How do I have 9 text messages out of nowhere?
I would imagine I can throw some guesses your way if you're interested.
Oh, man. Yes.
I would imagine... we have an article. Mike Renner wrote one up on PFF.com that was basically what the hell is wrong with Baker this year, right? And the short answer is everything.
Yeah.
The long answer is... So people think of it in terms of his mistakes have gone up, right? His interceptions have spiked. Everything looks terrible. He's just making two more terrible plays. Honestly, the rate of turnover with the plays is about the same. His interceptions... Like, it hasn't really spiked that much, right? What has disappeared is the big plays. His big-time throw rate last year was monstrous. It's almost half what it was. his play from a clean pocket standard drop back, the stuff that he was absurdly good at in college and as a rookie, again, disappeared. Like, he is just, it's what we said earlier in the season, that he has lent hard into all of his flaws and has somehow pulled all the way back on the stuff that he was good at and is steering into the skid of what's going wrong.
Yeah. I don't like the regression from an accuracy standpoint.
Anything about his trajectory right now.
Yeah, I completely agree. Whereas Lamar has improved. So they flipped from an accuracy standpoint, which was multiple years of data saying the opposite. And, Lamar plus the situation that they've built around him has been fantastic. So everything is going the opposite directions there. Will be interesting to see what Cleveland does this offseason. Here's a nice little breakdown Ben Baldwin put out there. You see it?
No. What do you got?
So correlation, EPA. So EPA is a team stat, right? Mm-hmm. Expected points added. And a lot of people in the analytics community, Ben Baldwin is one of them. Sometimes you attach it to a player, right? Even though it is mostly a team stat. You understand it's a team stat, but you can attach it to a player. So here's EPA when this player throws the ball or whatever it is. And PFF grade, among a lot of other advanced metrics, has the highest correlation to EPA per play the following season. Higher than using EPA, total EPA, using EPA per play, using completion percentage over expectation, which is a hot analytical number right now, using DVOA, adjusted net yards per attempt, QBR from ESPN, touchdown to interception ratio, all these other things have been have gone through the ringer to see which one predicts EPA the best. PFF grade, the offense grade, is the best one.
Okay.
Good job, PFF. That was my...
This is not helping your heart out at...
Oh, gosh, it's not at all. So what are you looking for in this one? Do the Browns have a shot at this point? Things are... The Ravens' defense since week four has been a much better.
Yeah, I don't see...
They weren't good in this game. Couple coverage busts.
I know they won the first encounter, but I find it very hard to envisage a scenario where they can possibly win this one. The Ravens' defense is killing people, and that's without the fact that the Browns' offense is well capable of shooting itself in the foot before a defense gets into the picture. And then the Ravens' offense has become virtually unstoppable. Again, I don't think Cleveland has a shot at stopping that. I don't see how this is close, let alone a win.
Two things to look for here. The Ravens can wrap up the number one seed. Mm-hmm. And I just want to see Earl Thomas. Again, he spooked Jarvis Landry into an interception the first time around just by reading an RPO, sprinting to the ball, and Jarvis Landry was like, heck no, I'm not finishing that slant. Mm. That was one of those interceptions that, like,
you were
wasn't
sending
a great
me
throw,
plays
but, you know.
After the last Browns game that was just, they were kind of unbelievable. Like, we've talked about discipline and all the kind of stuff that's going wrong, but you were like, people falling over, just making a cut.
It looked like a circus,
the Browns offense
the other day.
It was ridiculous.
In the same game, they had Jarvis Landry. He was running a stick route and somehow ran a spin move and fell over.
Yep.
Pro bowler, Jarvis Landry.
Right.
Demetrius Harris tried to run a stick route, tripped over his own feet,
yeah.
caught his balance, and then the ball was on top of him by the time he caught his
just
balance.
Just in time
drop.
For the ball to arrive.
And then the Browns somehow have the worst tap pass shovel pass game that I've ever seen.
I don't understand what is happening to that.
Last week's iteration was shovel or tap pass to Jarvis Landry that goes nowhere. Like seven guys jailbreak into the backfield, and Jarvis decides to, I guess Baker called for the ball. He laterals it back to Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, I don't even know if he did or if he just thought, I can't go this way. Like, oh, look.
This looks like peewee football, like in a desperation play. Yeah. Like, let me just chuck it back to the quarterback. And Baker had to, like, just hang your quarterback out to dry.
Blue Pepper thought that Landry could have cut it up and got the necessary yardage.
I love that we just went Blue Pepper.
Yeah.
Well done.
We need to look into whether, like, the tap pass stuff is so catastrophic that I wonder if we should look into whether they're actually telegraphing enough to the point where teams know it's coming. You know what I mean? If there's something formation or alignment or something obvious that is like the Browns are making these tap passes so freaking obvious that teams are literally murdering them. I have never seen anybody throw an interception on a tap pass, but the Browns did earlier in the season. Anyway, so I don't see there's any way they win this game. Next.
Great. Sorry. Where are we here?
Yeah, Ravens. Get your stuff together.
Ravens are going to win. Saints at the Titans. Drew Brees coming off. Just, man, what a masterful performance on Monday Night Football. 29 of 30. Mistake-free football accuracy. He looked fantastic. Going up against Ryan Tannehill,
a
best quarterback in the league.
Of the best two quarterbacks in the NFL.
Right.
Ryan Tannehill and 48-year-old Drew Brees.
Tannehill. So Brees has been fantastic this year, but Tannehill actually has taken the lead in our straight-up accuracy percentage rankings. Tannehill, and he's doing it down the field. A.J. Brown has been dominant. I mean, this could get – does it get into shootout territory? I know the Saints are always a little bit different away from the dome. They got two games. They got to play outdoors these last couple weeks. But this should be an intense matchup, and Tennessee is banged up in the secondary.
Mm.
So, I mean, the Saints have to win, too. I mean, they're trying to keep pace.
The whole NFC has to win. I mean, this is
they do.
Like
it's all playoff games.
Right. The entire dynamic of these teams coming down the stretch is everybody is fighting for something. It's actually worked out pretty well that way. So, yeah, the Saints, you know, we saw what they were able to do. The Colts absolutely abused them. Tennessee, I think injuries have started to bite recently, but like Ryan Tannehill, this thing is not going away. Like he's not going to suddenly regress back into Ryan Tannehill in the final 2 weeks of the season. It may well happen in the offseason, but Ryan Tannehill is legit for the remainder of this season, and that makes Tennessee pretty freaking dangerous.
Very dangerous. Yeah, I agree. And, you know, when you have A.J. Brown on the outside winning as often as he does, a great compliment to the Hall of Famer, Corey Davis. Mm-hmm. I mean, I want to see some A.J. Brown, Marshawn Lattimore matching up.
That'll be fun.
Should be some good stuff there. You know, I think with the Saints, locking up the dome is so crucial.
Yeah.
Again, Saints fans get really mad when we say that. But I'm not saying they can't win on the road. They're just a different team.
Well, particularly when you look at the other alternatives, right? It's San Francisco, which could be anything, weather-wise, like wet, manky, whatever. It's not nice. Yeah.
Wind, whatever.
Green Bay.
Yep.
I don't want to do that.
Seattle.
Outside in the freezing ass cold. Seattle, probably going to rain. Minnesota right. Would be okay.
Like yeah.
Dome, they've done that before.
Right.
Didn't go the best last time.
Didn't finish great. But
you know, that's the one that wouldn't terrify them.
Right.
And then Dallas, Philly. You know, but like that's three potential pretty ugly venues versus your own home dome.
Right. Breeze versus Tannehill, I think it's going to be a great matchup. A.J. Brown, Marshawn Lattimore. A lot of good stuff to like in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Who you got?
Now we're moving. Where'd I go? New Orleans.
Taking the Saints.
All of us are. Unanimous.
Man, nobody believes in our Titans, huh?
Apparently not.
Disappointing loss last week for the Titans. Some quirky plays, but I think their secondary being banged up, Adoree Jackson banged up and everything could come back to bite, though.
Yeah.
And Michael Thomas getting ready to break the all-time receptions record.
Mm.
I mean, there were plays on broadcast the other day where I'm looking at it and I'm like, the Colts are sitting in cover two.
Yeah.
There's nobody moving on their defense. And Breeze is like seeing the same. I'm like, of course he's going to know where to go. Like, you're not even trying.
They're right definitely going to break this record as well, by the way. If there's a team that will like force feed something to get a record broken, it's the Saints.
Saints love breaking records.
If they go into the final week of the season and Thomas needs like eight receptions,
they'll get him like 160.
Right. He'll have eight by the end of the first quarter.
Yeah. He's still no Jimmy Smith, but, you know, we're all taking the Saints in this one. Jacksonville Jaguars at the Atlanta Falcons. Anything of note?
How much do you think you would be fined if you worked for Tom Coughlin?
What do you mean?
Do you not see all the fines?
I saw.
Lenny got signed for sitting down.
Yeah, that was a little weird.
You would be fined up the yin yang.
Tom, no, I would not.
You can't even turn up to the meeting 10 minutes early.
It's a 9 o'clock meeting.
This is Tom Coughlin we're talking about here.
Yeah, but he at least changes
the
clock.
You would be fined every week.
So, yeah, we work with every NFL team. I've been in and out of the Giants building a few times. And back when Coughlin worked there, I mean, the clocks are legitimately on Coughlin time. So right. I used to think it was like the time stays the same. You just be 5 minutes early.
Yeah.
No, he legitimately changes the clock to Coughlin time.
Uh-huh.
Somebody on the Jags
that
was saying it's back to...
That seems more silly to me.
Of course it is.
Like more than just expecting you to be 5 minutes early to a meeting that starts...
Right, because you're supposed to be 5 minutes... Then you have to be 5 minutes early for Coughlin time, which makes you 10 minutes early.
Yeah, but Yeah, but it only seems to have a purpose if you're just, no, look, we do things 5 minutes earlier than, you know, you're supposed to. It's scheduled.
Right, but if you change the clock.
Because of the five-minute crap. But if you actually change your entire time, now you're just operating on a different time zone to the rest of humanity.
Listen, Tom.
And that makes no sense at all.
Tom led my 96 Jaguars to the AFC Championship. If it was good enough for Brunel, it's good enough for me. I would fall in line. I would never be fined.
Maybe Mark got fined.
Never. There's no way Mark got fined. They cut Andre Rison once he
Bad Moon
screwed them. Yeah,
greatest nickname in the history of the sport.
Well, he was Bad Moon in '96. He kept running the wrong routes, and poor Mark had to throw interceptions because of it.
Look, Bad Moon can do what he wants with a name like that.
Jaguars Falcons. Speaking of '96, this was the game the Jaguars had to beat the Falcons to get into the playoffs. Let's just preview this game like it's 1996.
With most games, I would say that's not a bad idea, but with this one, it might actually be good.
Gardner Minshew.
Yeah.
Late game magic against the Falcons. Do the Falcons look like the team we thought they would be coming into the season? And just watch Grady Jarrett play football. That's what I'm watching for in this game.
Yeah. I mean, the Falcons, can they back up any kind of good game? Because they don't appear to have been able to do that all season long.
Need some offseason momentum.
Yeah.
I wonder if a strong finish helps Dan Quinn as well.
Yeah. The Jags, I think they have to be getting a little bit concerned with the whole Minshew thing. They sort of box himself into a corner by throwing him back out there. And since they've done that, he hasn't graded at all well.
Yeah, despite the fourth quarter comeback against the Raiders.
Right. I mean, the totality of the game, right?
Yeah, yeah, I understand.
So, you know, we've got now two games for him to try and rescue his season in terms of at least make it look shiny heading into the offseason. Because if he has another two games like he's just had the last few, that's not a pretty scenario to be heading into the offseason under.
I want more Nick Foles data points. Anyway, the Jaguars, jobs are open. Get PFF in there to help run the show. We're here to help you guys.
We will not adjust your clocks.
We will never.
Promise.
Nope. That's not a part of PFF IQ.
Won't do it.
I'm taking the Falcons in this one, though.
Same. All of us are, in fact.
You but know if you want me to take the Jags, I will. Tony, if you want me to get in there. Also, Tony, like, I could probably give a better stunner than Tony did.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, surely your stunner would be impeded by your size.
I was, we did a little trampoline wrestling back in the day.
But here's the question.
I got some pro wrestling skills and size.
If you were to drop a Stone Cold stunner on Austin, would he have to bend down by the point your ass hit the canvas?
Yeah, it'd be weird.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't use the stunner.
I'm just saying, there's a logistics thing.
I'm more of a choke slam guy.
There's a geometry in place here.
I would choke slam him.
You could choke slam him pretty
Tony,
well.
I'm going to choke slam you. Get me on AEW, Tony. I'm going to send him a DM.
Maybe that's... We could get Michael working on the Instagram. You could choke slam Austin through a table out there.
Yes.
That would go
fine. Set that up. We need a little... we need a working table.
A working table?
Well, yeah. They don't slam each other through real tables. They're working tables. You tape it up. Look, it's a working table.
It feels like that's effort we don't want to put into this. I say you just put them through
just a table. Put them through a real table?
Yeah.
It'll take some
this
force.
One, George, once he gets rid of this table,
so
let's
here's
put
the deal.
Him through it.
It's like I've been begging for opportunities to go run the show in the NFL. Now I'm begging to be a part of the AEW pro wrestling scene that Tony Khan runs.
This table. We'll get Austin in here. You put him through the table. That's how you get rid of this set and we move on.
I like it. Let's set that up. Mm-hmm. Guys, set that up. All right, I'm taking Atlanta.
Yeah, in this we one. All are.
Oakland Raiders at the Los Angeles Chargers. Man, we are just going through these. We've reached the
end of the slate that doesn't really mean anything.
Darren, Waller versus Derwin. Head-to-head matchups. Yay, let's do it.
All right. Philip Rivers, can he stop making terrible decisions? Is he done? Is Rivers done? Is it over?
No, stop.
Is it over?
Stop it.
He's out of contract. Where's he going to go?
Oh, it might be over for the Chargers.
Right.
Now. There was a point like 10 weeks ago, everybody was like, well, he'll get closer to home. He might be with the Titans next year. Now it's like, well, Ryan Tannehill looks like a Hall of Famer, so maybe we don't need him.
So he's just...
Man, things change quickly.
Yep.
I'll tell you this. Let's use some fantasy football implications. Josh Jacobs is out. Not good for my football team. But my other team, I've got a choice. And the choice I've made is to roll with Philip Rivers. I want YOLO Philip Rivers.
So that's why you're
saying
as
my fantasy QB. Yeah.
Okay.
I want him at home against the Raiders. He's going to. I don't care if he throws three picks. He's going to throw like four touchdowns, 400 yards.
Picks bad for fantasy purposes?
No, because it doesn't matter. Like Jameis is so good in fantasy because picks don't matter that much.
Oh. Okay.
You know, they're just not downgraded enough volume matters. So Rivers is going to lead me to a championship.
All right.
In my side league.
Fair enough.
Taking the Chargers in this one.
Yeah, same.
Detroit Lions at the Denver Broncos. What is this slate?
Well, it was good up front, and now we've reached the period where you just don't want to watch it.
It's like, this is like the week of, you know, who's going to pick in the top 10.
Yeah.
A lot of top 10 pick battles here.
But we got Drew Lock, right?
And David Blau.
Yeah, David Blau. The Lions are busy endorsing everything, saying everyone's back next year. We like the foundations we built here. And so they kind of went all Falcons on us because they were saying, we think we've built the foundations of a tough and something else entirely irrelevant football team.
Well, they did.
Not that we have the foundations of anything good, just the foundations of something tough.
The best thing that they did this year was throw the ball down the field and unleash the real Stafford.
Yeah, who then got hurt.
Who then got hurt, and it didn't really matter. Mm. But yeah, we've been saying every move that they've made over the last 2 years essentially has been pointed toward a run first, tough, stop the run, run the ball type of team, which hasn't had great success. Even when Stafford was out there, YOLOing it like crazy and tearing it up. So, some decisions from a team building standpoint in Detroit.
You know a move they've made that I like?
What's that?
They put Frank Ragnow back at center this year, and he's
been good.
Maybe going to end the year as our top graded center.
Sorry. Just responding to something else.
Mm.
All right. Yeah, Ragnow's been good.
Yeah.
So, I want to see Drew Lock bounce back.
Yeah, I mean, I want to see more Drew Lock, period.
Yeah.
I think he's basically the only reason to watch.
I was expecting
game,
regression. It was a pretty hard regression. It was in the snow and all that stuff. But he's at home. Will we see some more, real Drew Lock? I'm taking Denver in this one.
Same.
Arizona Cardinals at the Seattle Seahawks. Another team, Seahawks. They're all in the battle for that number one overall pick. Kyler Murray versus Russell Wilson. Two.
Mm.
We're just going to label all the matchups.
Are they going to deploy Kyler Murray as a force, an enforcer on defense, the way he absolutely annihilated Mac Wilson?
He did pop him, huh?
He really did.
That was a nice pick by Mac Wilson, by the way. That was like the thing he flashed in the preseason that he hasn't shown on
yet. Two of the nicest hits of the year have come from quarterbacks.
With Tannehill?
Yeah, Tannehill burying Maurice Hurst on a return, and then Kyler Murray coming out like a torpedo and just throwing himself, literally throwing himself at Mac Wilson.
They're just athletes, good players. Patrick Peterson had, making a ton of plays last week against the Browns. I'm always intrigued by, the Seahawks trotting out their big receivers, especially DK Metcalf. You might see some of that matchup, Metcalf and PP7, right?
PP7? That's what we call himself?
That's what he was. 21 now, but he was 7 in college.
Oh, okay.
Patrick Peterson.
Sorry. Yeah. No, I knew that part. I wasn't sure we were getting 7.
The 7 stood in my head from the LSU days.
Okay. No Josh Gordon, because he's got himself suspended again.
Correct.
Which is a shame it's a shame on a personal level because, clearly the man has some demons that he can't knock. It's also a shame from a football watching perspective because the dude just showed what he's capable of, torching double coverage, diving for a perfect snag on a deep Russell Wilson pass. That would have been nice to see maintained for a while, but that's gone. So we're now back to the DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, and others scenario, which is, less fun.
Yeah. So Seattle, depending on how you break it down, point differential and some of the ways that they've played, one of the worst teams battling for a number one seed in history. And I think that speaks to Russell Wilson and what he's been able to do.
MVP.
Carrying that offense.
Colin Cowherd said he was MVP today.
It's because Colin loves us. He has us on every week, and he just loves saying, PFF believes this.
Quoting ourselves all the time.
Yeah. I mean, Colin's better than a lot of the pure hot take artists, I think.
Also, we talked about this before. That guy's on TV like every day for hours. Can you imagine having to fill that amount of air?
Oh, there's a lot of time to talk.
Like, if you were asked to talk about anything for that period of time, how much crap would you end up spouting?
Probably a lot.
Right. So, cut the guy a break.
Not like this controlled environment here, PFF YouTube channel.
No, this has been distilled and filtered to the point where you're only getting the very best.
All right, now we got some really good matchups to round out the week. We're all taking Seattle, by the way. But the Dallas Cowboys at the Philadelphia Eagles, the battle for the NFC East. I know you did a little breakdown for the old PFF.com this week.
Yeah, it was harder work than I'd anticipated it being. My original premise was that A, the original premise kind of disappeared last week because somebody won. So, like, you know, initially it was one of these teams might win the division with a losing record.
Yeah.
Now, technically, that's still possible because they can tie.
Right.
But when you get to the point where you require a tie for it to happen, it's probably not happening. But the point was the last two teams that did that won the game. We had the Beastquake and whatever Carolina did to win their game. And if you kind of look at it, like, these teams are both, they should be better than they are. And they should both be capable of, you know, winning. So the idea that this slow foot race to the end of the NFC East is just a bad punchline in the playoffs this year. Like, I don't know that you would be scared of facing either of these teams if you're one of the NFC powerhouses, but they're not necessarily an easy out. One of these teams is going to be hosting a playoff game, and they both have the capability of showing up in one game, particularly at home, and knocking off somebody that comes in thinking they're just going to roll.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. Like, are they underachieving from where they should be? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But we saw Dallas's potential last week.
But the problem is it's very difficult to make that case in a sort of macro level of numbers, right? Because all their numbers are fundamentally not that great because they're, you know, they're losing games. Well, you can make it on a game-by-game level and say, look, in any one game, Carson Wentz is capable of going out there being a superstar, even with crappy receivers.
But at a macro level, the Cowboys have had one of the best offenses in the NFL.
Right, but it hasn't helped.
Helped, but it's still one of the more stable. So offense is more stable than defense, and then you say, okay, we just use luck into a pretty good defensive game because they're still talented on the defensive side.
Yeah. Dallas's thing, honestly, the biggest thing they have is, okay, so they've played a bunch of good teams close, right?
Yeah.
Narrow loss to the Saints, narrow loss to the Patriots, narrow loss to the Vikings, and then just went and stomped all over the Rams, who had a winning record, you know, right. Still do, right? Have a good record at that point. So they actually have some pretty good results in their schedule. It's just that they've also got some really terrible ones, and we were like, where the hell is Dallas gone?
Right.
So I think Dallas is the easier case to make that they actually are not a terrible side, and if you face them in the playoffs in Dallas, that's not an easy game.
Definitely easier. Dak playing better than Wentz.
Yeah.
This year. Especially
Wentz, since week 7, is ranked 32.
Yeah, it's been rough. And one of the things that had, early in the year, here was the argument for Wentz. We were like, he's got 5 big-time throws that were dropped or could have been caught, and he hasn't had, you know, we talk about the fumble, harsh downgrades. The fumbles weren't there. He was like a 90-plus fumble grade. Now he's a disaster holding on to the football. 29 fumble grade on the season. So the turnover-worthy plays are through the roof. And all year, there's just been this disconnect offensively, which has gotten even worse now with the receiver issues that they have.
Yeah, just the fact they don't have any.
Trotting out, you know, no receivers.
Hey, you put some respect on Greg's name.
Hi, Greg Ward has been fantastic.
Yeah, I wouldn't go that far.
He's made some nice plays.
Yeah.
I'm taking Dallas in this one, and you're still going to go Eagles.
Yeah, well, I'm taking the Eagles for reasons that were probably clear to me at the time, but I can't quite summon back to memory.
Strong analysis. That's what we're looking for here. Kansas City Chiefs at the Chicago Bears, Sunday night football matchup.
Oh, that's why Dak's busted up and hurt.
Oh, I meant to mention that too. Dak is busted up.
There you go. That's why. We're going with Wentz pulling it out and at home against a busted up Dallas. Dak.
There you go. Dallas crushed the Eagles in Dallas, which doesn't mean anything for the rematch. I also think, you know, Doug Peterson, you know, he will lean more on the aggressive side when necessary, and
well,
all
that's
that
one
stuff.
Of the reasons, like, I think they're dangerous.
Exactly. I'm trying to think of the dangerous things that
they
these
go
guys
for
it
fourth
up.
Down a lot. They go for 2 points more than most teams. They have a kicker that can make a 61-yard field goal if it comes down to that. You know, like, there's reasons this team is dangerous. It's just that it hasn't, like, the totality of the problems has outweighed that for most of the
defensive
season.
Line that can pressure. You
yeah,
know,
second best pressure rate in the NFL behind only the Steelers.
Yep. Kansas City Chiefs at the Chicago Bears, Sunday night football. When I see this matchup, I just kind of wish it was last year. The way that Bears defense was playing.
Yeah.
It's in Chicago, the way the Chiefs offense was playing last year. Not that they're much different this year other than Mahomes missing a few more throws and being banged up. Last year would have been a fantastic matchup, best offense versus best defense in the NFL.
The Bears have been a pains to point out this week that this is not a one-man matchup of Trubisky versus Mahomes.
No, it's not.
This is two teams
facing
each other, which is, you know, just as well, because that would not go well for the Chicago.
No, if it was one-on-one.
Yeah.
Bears fans still, like, all over the place.
Well, that's the thing, right? So it was initially took them an age to finally jump off the Trubisky bandwagon. and they finally did. Then he played well for like a game, and they jumped right back on. And now I honestly don't know where they are. I think they're confused.
Well, here's my essential take. He has played throw for throw, play by play, very similar to last year, right?
Overall,
this is a perfect breakdown of the PFF grading process. And I pulled out some of these stats just to bring perspective, right? So I pulled out a few stats on things that Mitch Trubisky cannot control, has zero control over pretty much. Yards on, so dropped passes, yards on inaccurate but contested catches. So we're saying it's tight coverage, it's not optimal ball location, and, you know, it's on the receiver to make the catch or not, and then screen passes. So in those areas, last year, he only lost 61 yards on drops. This year, double that, 123. So same throws, losing double the yardage. Last year, on those contested catches that we don't think the ball location was great, he had 209 yards. This year, only 93. So about 100 free yards last year, or more than that. And then screens, last year, 355 for yards. This year, 285. So another 70 yards right there, last year to this year. You add it up, it's a whole bunch of yards, right? And then last year, he had 5 touchdowns on screens. Again, out of his control. Good play call, good play after the catch. This year, only has 1. Contested catch thing, too. He had 1 touchdown last year, 0 this year. So 5 free touchdowns last year. If you just take those numbers, things that he can't control, and you just roll those, the hidden yardage into this year, his passer rating jumps to 90. From 84 to 90. Last year, it was 95, his passer rating. So now, just taking like 3 data points with a similar throw-by-throw grading, Trubisky's stats start to merge. And again, I think this is one of the best ways to bring context to the PFF grades, right? The quarterback can play at this level, and then the output could be here, really high. It could be pretty high. It can be average. It could be a little bit below. Like, there's a range of outcomes of this, right, based off this one level of play. And it has nothing to do with the quarterback. I think it's one of the best things that we do in our ability to isolate quarterback play.
Yeah.
All that said, the 2 years of Trubisky has been, you know, not what you want from your quarterback, even though he has been a little bit better overall in recent weeks.
Right. So since week 10, he has a top 6 grade. He's 6th. Both in overall and passing grade. So it has legitimately been like a clear, hard split in a season. But now, as we said before, that doesn't mean that there's a story there, that the light has finally gone on for Trubisky. Let's start thinking of 2020 and how we can dominate this thing.
Because you know what last year was? Last year was week 4, unbelievable game against the Bucs, right? One of the best. I think he was QB of the week that week. And then whatever the week was against Detroit last year, another unbelievable game. They just happen to be staggered throughout the season, where this year all of his good games happen to be at the end. It's pretty much random, that component. And that's why, like, man, our data guys are just taking all the stories away from us. We would love to have a story of, like, the first half of the season was this, and the second half of the season was this, therefore,
I mean,
have optimism. But it's so random.
It doesn't mean that it isn't either, right?
It's true.
Entirely possible that Trubisky has, in fact, turned a corner, that the few weeks injured away let him reset and get himself back together. And Trubisky has legitimately, the light's gone on. Something has changed. Now he is making progressions towards the quarterback we thought he could be when he was coming out, right? The problem is that it's all about what are the odds you play with. And because the biggest danger is small sample size, what we always say is essentially to lean with the bigger numbers, right? So we have this one sort of instance of a split in bad play and then good play. And, or if you want to put it a more generous way, we have like 6 weeks of improved play. On the other hand, we have like 2.5 years of him playing basically the same. So do you lean with the 6 games that are the most recent because they paint a nice story you want to tell, which is possible that is happening? Or do you lean with the 2.5 years because they're a much bigger sample size and it's just safer? I think at this point you have to lean with the 2.5 years, but that's not to say that the alternate isn't true, isn't what is happening.
Yeah.
We just don't know. And if you don't know, lean with the thing that's more safe.
The interesting point in all this is that you can have a PFF grade at 65, say, which isn't great, and have a good productive season. Do you see that?
Yeah.
Secret Santa stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can have a good productive season. It's just difficult to maintain it than if you have, say, a 75 PFF grade or an 85 PFF grade. So people are sending baseball cards of me for Secret Santa.
Yeah.
And it wasn't me because that's in the non-office exchange.
True. Yeah, have you seen some of the gift wrapping that's gone on in the office Secret Santa?
Whatever it is, I'm going to make it worse tomorrow.
No, I can promise you you're not. I can guarantee it.
So I saw Rick's. I helped Rick with his.
That might have been it. But the one that I thought couldn't be topped was somebody had just taken the Amazon package from Neil.
That's Rick.
Oh, okay. Wrapped gaffer tape around it and wrote Neil on it.
I wrote Neil.
That is what I thought couldn't be topped.
Shoot.
But what has in fact...
So when this... Is Neil watching right now?
If he is, you just ruined Secret Santa.
I ruined Secret Santa.
So that I thought couldn't be made worse, right? But right now, there is a basketball sitting in a plastic bag.
Seriously?
Yeah. So here, I got the picture.
Oh, that's great.
Somebody has put a basketball and just stuck it in a plastic bag.
Is that going to be for noon ball?
Under the tree.
For our YMCA games?
That's a clear. How close to the camera can I make it?
It's a clear bag with a basketball. That's a poor wrap job.
Somebody's just putting a plastic bag
around a basketball. If that's the standard, I'm going to take the Amazon box I have upstairs and just, you know, put it in a Kroger bag.
Yeah, well, that's basically what they did.
That's great. I might get a card from my person. I mean, I had Austin last year. He was the best Secret Santa.
Yeah?
I wish he had me again this year.
Oh, you mean he was the guy. He was your Santa.
He was my Santa.
Yeah.
He gave me some good stuff. Kudos. Whoever gets Austin this year, you know, you're going to get a thoughtful gift that you're going to use and enjoy and... It might be coffee or whatever. You know, it's good.
I don't know if that fits the spirit of our Secret Santa here. A useful gift that you can use.
I like the useful stuff. Okay. Like a Steve Palazzolo baseball card. A great gift. Search it online. You could probably find it for anywhere between 8 and 15 cents.
Mm, I got mine signed.
You did. So that's proof that I didn't send it. I would have absolutely signed it.
No, you wouldn't. You'd have had that shipped via eBay and you wouldn't have gotten near it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Anyway, the Chiefs and the Bears are playing.
Yeah.
And Mahomes is coming off his best game of the season. It was in the snow. If he gets into a groove, man, the Chiefs are as dangerous as it gets. The Chiefs are still technically alive, looking for that number two seed. They're going to be rooting for, you know, the Bills to beat the Patriots or the Patriots to lose one of their next two games, and then the Chiefs would have to win out.
Both of which are entirely possible.
There's head-to-heads and tiebreakers and all that stuff. I'm not sure where the Chiefs and Bills land as far as tiebreakers go, but all that stuff is in play at this point in the season.
Hard to see the Bears winning this one, to be honest.
Yeah, I think it could be a decent game. Overall, in the second half of the season, the Bears have looked more like they did last year than they have, and they could piece together a game.
Sure.
I still want to see Mahomes against that Bears D.
Yeah, and Trubisky playing at this kind of level, right? Average to above average to maybe even a little bit good. It changes everything. It puts them in a completely different landscape. They are now able to build something around him that functions rather than dumbing it down to try and prop him up. Like, they're a completely different prospect right now than they were earlier.
Still taking Kansas City in this one. You going to there too? We're going unanimous across the board, Kansas City. And then to wrap it up, Monday Night Football, Green Bay Packers at the Minnesota Vikings. And more Kirk Cousins on primetime. Cousins had his worst game of the season by far back in week 2 against Green Bay. Fumbles and turnover-worthy plays left and right. But since that point, he has been absolutely fantastic.
So he started the season not playing well. And this was the game where after this game, his receivers were throwing him under the bus. It was this passing game is a disaster. And then, you know, boom. Then Cousins goes out there and starts playing like a superstar and hasn't really let off for the remainder of the year, even though we thought it was inevitable that would happen. But Cousins has been playing really well. That Vikings offense is really good. The downside for them is that they probably are without both their top two running backs. Dalvin Cook is definitely not playing. Alexander Mattison is probably not playing.
Fantasy implications.
Hmm. Which means Mike Boone is probably going to get the majority of the carries. And honestly, like, I think Mike Boone is a legit running back. And in this offense, like, the system is doing well to help these guys as well. But if you've watched Vikings preseason for the past, like, for a while, Mike Boone is legit. He makes some plays.
Yeah, he looked great the other day running the ball. The scheme is nice. You know, there's some really good matchups to watch in this one. Anytime J.R. Alexander is going up against Stephon Diggs or Thielen.
Is Thielen back? What's his deal?
He was back last week.
But was he on a pitch count or did he get hurt again?
I didn't check.
Because he didn't play that much.
Thanks for putting me on the spot.
You're welcome.
I was mostly trying to highlight Diggs, though, versus Jair.
Sure, I could appreciate why you would do that. I know that they've matched up with Thielen in the past. So.
No, absolutely. So that's a good matchup in that secondary. And then you mentioned Kenny Clark earlier in the show. Him and Garrett Bradbury up front. Bradbury's got just the run of the difficult nose tackles in the NFC North. Just another example of what the rookie center, who's had his ups and downs so far this year, has to deal with.
Mm-hmm. More downs than ups.
Were you arguing with Vikings fans about Brian O'Neill? Explain the sack thing.
Oh, no, it's just one guy. Brian O'Neill is on some crazy streak of 1,000 pass blocking snaps without giving up a sack. I don't know if he's given up one yet in his career.
So we're not, just because your guy to block gets the sack.
There's a dude that tagged all of us on Twitter and is like, why does PFF refuse to acknowledge that Brian O'Neill has in fact given up a sack? And he's got video of his man sacking Russell Wilson, I think, during a play. And it's one of those where
wait, sacking who? Brian O'Neill? Brian O'Neill's blocking for
Cousins, Russell, whatever.
Cousins.
Oh, yeah. Against Seattle was my...
Oh, I got you. Yeah.
And the point is, so it's one of those plays where, he's running the arc, and then the quarterback gets forced back into the path of the guy running the arc.
You don't blame...
Who then chases him down and tackles him from behind. It's okay, but he's blocking for a specific spot at the point where you move the quarterback into that spot. That's not his fault. So it's one of those ones where just because his man sacks the quarterback does not mean that he is responsible for the sack.
Yeah, those are... I like to explain those plays because I want people to understand how much nuance and detail and how much we put in to this.
I like the ones where I can just draw up GIFs about funny snaps and laugh at people.
You did do that. Marquise Pouncey made the Pro Bowl, and he is not grading well for us. And he's got the worst snap on target snap percentage in the NFL.
He has 11,
as a center.
11 bad wayward snaps.
Including one at Duck's feet.
Yeah. And you might think, what does that matter? It's not a big thing. But these are essentially 11 snaps bad enough that if the quarterback fumbles it or doesn't get a handle on it and it goes, these could be turnovers. These are essentially 11 turnover-worthy plays for an offensive lineman. That, in and of itself, is pretty spectacular to articulate, right? Two, it's 5 more than any other center in the NFL.
Right.
And he's played less games because the guy got suspended for drop kicking somebody in the face. So
that's the other perspective too. It's he didn't have a bad game. He just had 2 bad snaps. It's but if you did that in every game, you'd have 32 on the season. That wasn't that bad. Those are 2 horrendous interceptions. But other than that, you'd have 32 on the season.
It's actually quite hard for a center to essentially cause a turnover, right?
Yeah.
But that's a way of doing it. And if you're doing that at twice the rate of anybody else in the NFL, that's bad.
Right.
But we also did this thing where, let's say you're in a random good mood and you say, I don't even care if he can't snap the ball. Take him all away. If you take away all of his bad snaps on the year, he moves up to 23rd. So, he's still not good. So, the fact that Pouncey made the Pro Bowl is a joke.
So, I really just want to highlight, I think our O-line stuff is fantastic. We got guys that are smart and know football and take every last bit of context into consideration.
Well, you would say that, Steve.
When we're grading these guys. I would say that.
Here's the thing,
I'm biased.
An actual NFL offensive lineman DM'd me during the whole Pouncey Pro Bowl fiasco and was like, look, even if you don't think your stuff is that good, you're not wrong to the tune of 36-5. You know what I mean? You're somewhere in the ballpark. Maybe you rate him slightly better than that, but you're not putting him in the Pro Bowl if he's that bad.
Right. Let's see how this hard out goes. Anyway, Aaron Rodgers on the other side.
Will you be okay unless they phone you early like mine did when
sometimes
I had
they do.
Out.
Sometimes my phone doesn't ring either, so I'm going to have to call them if it doesn't work. Aaron Rodgers on the other side.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers screwed Kirk Cousins out of a Pro Bowl bid.
Yeah, this is one of those years that Cousins deserved it more than Rodgers.
Cousins has
more
been
than
better
the name
than Aaron Rodgers this season. As insane as that is to believe. Yeah. It's true.
Cousins deserves credit. I mean, I think Minnesota has the offense to go on the run.
Yeah.
This is a huge game. It's another playoff game. Playoff seeding and positioning, so many things on the line here. It's Monday Night Football. It's going to be fantastic.
Big key for this, for me in this, is can Green Bay's receivers that have not been spectacular this year get joy against Minnesota's corners? Likewise, right? They've been a problem as well. Particularly Xavier Rhodes, who we've been talking about, needs to be basically sat down to try and get healthy before the playoffs. That is a potential mismatch that Green Bay can find to win this.
I think that still, like, the narrative of Green Bay, like, being really good early in the game and scripted stuff and then being able to adjust, that has just showed up too many times this year, and they need to buck that trend at some point. Green Bay.
Yeah.
Second half. All right. Who are you going with in this one?
The Vikings.
Did you?
Yeah, I did.
I went with Green Bay.
No,
did I?
Didn't.
No, I went Minnesota. Best quarterback. You got to take the better quarterback. Kirk Cousins.
Yep.
Playing some good football right now. He's home in a dome. He could win a night game in a dome and at home and all that stuff. So there you have it. I'm out. I got a hard out.
You're
That's
right.
it. Week 16. Can't wait to watch all the action Saturday and Sunday. And we'll see you guys on Monday. Special thanks to all of our sponsors in this one.
Wrap it up.
We're out.
Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL.